You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 8th of February 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I have to begin today by issuing a correction, or I guess it's more of a refinement, basically, on the theory that I've been talking about and how computer simulations show that the group that is the most charitable towards its own and the most harsh towards outsiders is the group that wins the battle for group selection. And I've been suggesting that because our group of European heritage vastly outnumbers the ethnic minorities, in Britain it's about 85% white to 15% non-white, and I've been saying that that means that all we really need to do is be charitable to our own group and indifferent to the outsiders, and we should still win. And I wanted to check this. I did say I hadn't actually checked this, but that was my theory. So I spoke to Professor Dutton about it, and he said what that actually means is that such a group would be eventually displaced, but it might take a long time. So what it would mean is, if we were to be like that, is that it would buy us some time, basically. And thinking about the wording of being harsh to outsiders, the dictionary definition of harsh is rough or unpleasant. And according to our hate speech laws, we mustn't be hostile. And hostile means warlike or aggressive. So there is obviously a difference in quality of the two words there. The word hostile can include warlike, which would mean up to murder, basically, wouldn't it? So I guess that's why it's included as part of this intent to incite hatred, because the thinking behind that was hatred up to a level that could include murder. So they use this word hostile. But this word harsh that is used for explaining this computer simulation, that just means rough or unpleasant. And depending on the degree, I guess, of how rough or unpleasant somebody was to seem, it may still be within the law. But at least, even if we were just indifferent to the ethnic minorities and charitable to our own, it would mean that there would be, it would mean that it would be much, much slower for them to displace us in this competition for group selection, because that's what it is. It's a competition for group selection, for the group that is the most fit to survive. Anyway, I wanted to talk about something different today. David Lammy, the Shadow Secretary of State for Justice and Lord Chancellor, says it must be racial injustice that over half of under-18s in custody in Britain are black, Asian and minority ethnic. Over half of them. And he thinks that that means it must be racial injustice. Why does he not think that it means that they're more likely to be criminals? What is he saying here? Is he saying that the police are all racists and they are setting up these black, Asian, minority ethnics? Lammy, who as Shadow Lord Chancellor would be the most senior great officer of state in the United Kingdom if Labour were in power, technically outranking the Prime Minister, suggested that new figures showing ethnic minorities now account for 51% of people in youth detention was proof of structural racism. Now, 90% of the people that are in prison are male. Is that proof of structural misandry? No, it's proof that males are more likely to commit crimes. And yet, Lamy doesn't seem to be able to apply that same test of logic to his statistics here for the number of black and minority ethnics that are in prison. Why not? Well, obviously, because he sees that it is to his benefit to pretend that it's down to structural racism. He says, it is a national scandal that more than half of young people locked up are from a black, Asian or ethnic minority background. He railed in a statement shared on the Labour Party website. Yes, it is a scandal. It's a scandal that black, Asian and minority ethnics are three times as likely to carry out violent crimes than the rest of the population. That's why they're locked up. They're not locked up for stealing sweets from the local shop. I mean, you have to either be convicted of saying mean words about ethnic minorities on the internet, or you actually have to have carried out an extremely violent crime to actually be locked up. And obviously, because they're black, Asian or ethnic minorities, they're not going to be locked up for saying mean words on the internet, are they? He says, the Conservative government urgently needs to implement the recommendations in the Lamy Review it has so far ignored, as well as going further to recognise the scale of racial injustice in youth prisons. Referencing his report, which recommends, among other things, that more minority criminals should be offered deferred prosecutions, essentially sidestepping charges if they agree to participate in some sort of rehabilitation programme. Now, this Lamy Review is interesting because a lot of the so-called anti-racists will point to this and say, well, this is all evidence of structural racism. It shows that black people aren't as likely to get high positions in employment. They're not as likely to be employed as white people. It shows that more of them are in prisons. It shows that they're not as likely to do well at school or at university. And it must all be racism. And of course, us on the other side, who say that our solution for racism is to separate the races, we are just as against racism as the anti-racists. We just have a different solution as to how we should do it. We use the Lamy Review as well. We use the statistics that are in the Lamy Review to point out that there are differences between the races, and that all these statistics are is evidence that proves the difference between the races. And the way that we can show that what we're saying is correct is by finding a control group. And this is something that David Lamy did not do. He went to all the various multicultural countries in the world and said, look, it's the same everywhere else. Everywhere else, more black people are in prison than whites. It must be racism over there too. The one thing he didn't do is actually go to countries that were majority black, countries like Africa, and look at what the crime rate was in Africa. If he had done that, then it all becomes clear the reason why there are more black people in prison is because they commit more crimes. If you look at the crime rate in Africa, it's blindingly obvious that that is the case. It has the highest number of rapes in the world. All you have to do is look at the rape statistics in South Africa to understand why it is that there are more blacks in prison than there are whites. His solutions to this are to have more black judges. And of course, if you have more black judges, I mean, what is he saying there? Is he saying that he thinks that the black judges are going to be going lenient on their own people? And we're told that we're not supposed to discriminate in any way. Or is he implying there that because we have a lot of white judges, that the white judges are going to be discriminating against the blacks? Well, the white judges have been told that they should get these numbers down. And if there's any other form of punishment they can think of, if there's any excuse they can think of not to put black and minority ethnics in prison, then that's what they should be doing. And what this does is it creates privileged groups in society, doesn't it? It creates a group in society that are not going to get the same punishment as the other groups in society. In their push for so-called equality, all they end up doing is making society unequal. We used to be known for being particularly just throughout the world and for being uncorruptible and for actually having some form of equality. And what we've done since we've become multicultural is make everything completely unequal. We've ended up hobbling white people, basically, putting in diversity quotas so that white men aren't going to get the job, putting grants into universities that only apply to black pupils. All sorts of things have been put in place to actually hold the white people back and give the extra encouragement to blacks. And all that does is it pulls society back to the average rather than pushing forwards with the very best of, and the brightest of us, which are obviously going to be white because we have a much higher IQ. Instead of that, we end up with these bright, intelligent whites who just don't get utilised. He says, instead of denying the reality of structural racism, it is time for the government to finally act like Black Lives Matter. Well, how about he actually provides some proof for structural racism? His proof of this is to say, well, blacks commit a lot more crime. I mean, that is essentially what he is saying here. So he is saying that, in actual fact, blacks don't commit more crime. Two-thirds of them are in prison because they've been set up by the police or there was no evidence to actually find them guilty. I mean, it's just completely illogical what he is talking about here. The new figures on youth justice show the number of BAME detainees now stands at 51%, up from 49% in 2019 and 28% in 2010. And this is despite all these drives to get less black people into prison. It doesn't mean that there are less blacks committing crimes. It means that there are more blacks committing crimes and far more of them are not actually being sent to prison. And he's saying, well, we need to get this down to just 15%. So basically what he's calling for is more criminals on the streets so that we can pretend that blacks don't commit as much crime as whites. Labour complains that this is despite the fact that black, Asian and ethnic minority people make up just 14% of the UK population. But this does not account for the fact that the 14% estimate is based on census data, which is now a decade old and likely out of date due to years of mass immigration, or the fact that the BAME share of the youth population is much higher than the BAME share of the general population in any case. And those are both two good points to raise, but it's probably only about 15 or 16%. It's still going to be twice as likely that they're going to be in prison. And one of the ways that they've actually massaged the figures here, they say black, Asian and ethnic minority. And if they were actually just looking at black, they would find that youth offending, they're 10 times more likely to actually be in prison. Asians are less likely to commit crimes. In fact, Chinese and Japanese and Korean, they're less likely to commit crimes than white people are. So when they include all ethnic minorities together like this, it actually brings down the number of them that are in prison. I guess maybe he thinks it would just be too suspicious if we saw that 10 times as many of them were actually being locked up. But that is the case, according to his report, when you actually look at the youth, the ones that are in the youth hostels, the borstals, the ones that are under the age of 18. Neither Lammy or his party offered any indication that BAME individuals actually bear individual responsibility for the high proportion of them in custody, apparently considering it implicit that racism must be the key explanation and getting their number down the priority rather than safeguarding the public. And that is the point here. And I know I'm pointing it out here and I'm reading it out from this news article, and I do wonder how many people in the population realise this and actually use their logic and apply it to what is going on here. I don't know whether I did before I became a nationalist and learned all of this. I did start questioning it, that you just take what you're told for granted, don't you, really, when what the news tells you. If they tell you that it's racism that's causing this, and you think, well, why could it be that there's three times as many of them in prison? Oh, it must be that the white police are letting the white criminals off. And of course, that's not the truth. We know that they are going even more for whites than blacks. They're terrified to arrest blacks because they could get accused of racism. If something happens to the prisoner while he's within custody, then Black Lives Matter are going to go wild and riot. I mean, I have read reports where police have just said, well, we just, you know, we cannot arrest black people anymore because of the uproar that there will be. Remember that Dawn Butler when she got stopped in her car and the fuss she made about that and said that that was racism and put the film on the internet. I mean, all of this means that the police's hands are tied. They don't want to lose their position in the police, lose their career because some black guy accuses them of racism when he resists arrest and he gets tasered. And it's the same situation that we have in America. Mr. Lammy is no stranger to racial grievance politics, having previously branded an anti-knife crime campaign in chicken shops racist. And again, that was a really interesting one. That was actually fairly sensible. The Conservative Party wanted to alert people to the dangers of knife crime. And they wanted to target this advertising campaign at the group that was most likely to be involved in knife crime. And obviously, it's black and minority ethnics that are most likely to be involved in knife crime. Most of the knife crime happens in the multicultural cities, and most of those who carry it out and most of the victims are also black. I mean, it's also with shooting. I mean, we actually have a black gun crime unit that are called Trident, specifically for blacks that shoot one another. We have a gangs matrix that Sadiq Khan did away with because he said it was racist, because the vast majority of people that are involved in gangs that were on this list are all black. So the government wanted to target their anti-knife crime campaign at the group most likely to be involved in gun crime. It was blacks, and they did research that said that blacks like to go in chicken shops. It's one of their favourite foods. So they put this anti-knife crime campaign on the containers that the chicken comes in. It's a very sensible thing to do. It meant that it was actually targeted. What would be the point in targeting this anti-knife crime campaign on, I don't know, fish and chip shops or expensive restaurants in the countryside? There would be no point to it. It was targeted at the right group. And of course, Lammy said, no, that was racist. I mean, he is clearly interested in helping his people group, and that's what you would expect. It's white people that don't look out for their people group that is the issue. David Lammy is always championing causes that help black people, but you can see here with this one that he got it a little bit wrong. He automatically thought, well, let's attack white people for being racist. That's going to help my people group. But quite clearly, it wasn't helping his people group because this was actually targeted at them and trying to prevent them from stabbing one another. He also praised deep song lyrics by Sam Fender, in which he described himself as a white man full of shame with evil ancestry, and insisted that comparing the Tories to the Nazis was not strong enough, while demanding an illegal migrant amnesty. And it's David Lammy that's responsible for helping the Tories out, really, by pretending that they are actually right-wing. And of course, my occasional co-host, Horace, has done a lot of work on exposing how the Tories don't actually conserve anything at all, apart from left-wing policies that were put in place when Labour were in power. I have another news story here that I'd like to get into. A group of asylum seekers said that they will be leaving the United Kingdom to go back to the EU, complaining about the supposed racism of being provided with free taxpayer-funded accommodation at former British Army barracks. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, they come from countries that are 99 to 100% made up of their own people, so there's actually no racism there whatsoever, and then they come to a country that is multicultural, that they know is supposedly going to be racist, and then they complain about that when they actually get here. In the wake of record-breaking illegal boat migration from France across the English Channel, the Home Office was forced to house some migrants in two former military barracks, one in Wales and the other in Folkestone, Kent. And we've seen a lot of protests at this one in Wales. It's actually cost the police an absolute fortune policing the place because there's been protests on both sides pretty much continuous. And also this one in Kent was set fire to the other day, and also the one in Wales was set fire to, but the guy that set fire to the one in Wales, he was let off. I think the ones that set fire to the one in Kent, I think they were actually arrested for that. Following weeks of protests at the Napier Barracks in Kent, culminating in a group of asylum seekers allegedly setting fire to the facility, migrants have complained to the media about the supposedly poor conditions in the camp, which used to be home to uncomplaining British soldiers. I mean, just think about that. This is good enough for our army, but apparently it's not good enough for these fake refugees. Speaking to the left-wing independent website, a migrant from Syria said that he has been trying to escape the United Kingdom to continental Europe on a lorry, claiming he is not being treated like a human being by the British government. Well, I bet if he actually asked them, I'm sure that they would arrange for him to go back to continental Europe, and then he could claim his asylum there, couldn't he? I'm sure they would actually pay for him to actually go back to Syria if he really wanted. And perhaps then he could ask his own government to help him out, rather than asking other people's governments to help him out. The Home Office is making an effort to make people hate asylum seekers, he said. I cannot stay in this country when the government is pushing people to treat us in this way. I think a lot of others will do the same thing and leave the UK. Well, I hope they will, but I doubt it, and I certainly can't see any way that the Home Office is trying to make people hate asylum seekers. The Home Office is, or maybe not the Home Office, but the Law Commission is certainly looking at trying to make asylum seekers a protected category so they cannot even be criticised. And we constantly see pro-migration propaganda on the television and in all the newspapers. He says, the journey back is totally dangerous. There are just centimetres between the lorry and the ground. I could lose my arm, leg or my life. But in the UK, I am losing my dignity. Well, why did he come here in the first place? Why did he not just stay where he was? A 22-year-old migrant claimed that he initially fled Syria after a fear of being recruited by the Kurdish military. And he said that he came to Britain because he spoke some English and wanted to study aviation. That's right, he was going to be an airline pilot. I'm surprised he didn't say he was an astronaut. Can't even speak English, or just speaks a little bit of English, but thinks he's going to fly planes once he gets here. He went on to accuse the United Kingdom of being a racist country, saying, I used to think there was no distinction here between a Muslim and a Christian, between black and white, but I realise there is. I mean, why didn't he stay in Syria if that is what he wanted? In Syria, they have a multi-religious state. They have a secular state. There is no division between Muslim and Christian. That's what ISIS wanted to actually do away with. Bashar al-Assad's Syrian state has no preferences between Muslims and Christians, and it looks after Christians and it looks after Muslims, and they're all the same race there. So there is no racism in Syria. So if he was looking for a country that isn't racist, why didn't he just stay where he was? Another Syrian asylum seeker, a 49-year-old man, said that he illegally entered the United Kingdom in July of last year after paying a smuggler €1,000 to help him cross the English Channel from France. One thing I don't get with these fake asylum seekers that pay thousands of euros to get across the English Channel, why don't they just buy a dinghy? Because that's all they're given, is a dinghy to make their way across. I don't understand where the smuggler bit comes in, or how the smuggler is actually involved. The smuggler just gives them a dinghy for 10 or 20 of them, and I'm sure the dinghy itself must cost a lot less than 10 or 20,000 euros. They certainly don't look like they cost that much. The illegal migrant said that he is also planning on trying to get back to the EU, saying, I did not expect that they would put me in this camp. I am fleeing war. My nerves are tired. Is this a punishment for us? Why is this happening? I want to rest, but it feels like we are being punished. It is inhumane. Or why does he think that he should be in anything else other than a camp when all the refugees that are actually in Syria are in camps? All the refugees that are in Turkey are in camps. All the refugees that are in Iraq and in Palestine and in Lebanon, they are all in camps as well. That is where refugees live. So why does he think that he should be treated any better than his countrymen in a country almost over the other side of the world? Why doesn't he go and see his neighbours? I would suggest that possibly because he's some kind of criminal and his neighbours don't actually want him there. As to where he would prefer to live in Europe, the migrant said, "I will talk to my friends who have homes in other European countries." They were not put into military camps. In Syria, everything is gone. My home was destroyed. I want to feel that I am a human being. I want dignity and freedom. I am looking for safety. I came here because I thought there was no racism in the UK and that it was a country that protects people's human rights. Again, if his home was destroyed in Syria, then surely the Syrian government will help him to build another one. Why does he think that somebody else's government should pay for the fact that his home was destroyed in the war? And why was he not defending his country in this war? Did he support the people that were trying to make war against Bashar al-Assad? He must have done, because why else would he be going to other countries that also supported the groups that were trying to take down Bashar al-Assad? I mean, this guy is probably a wanted criminal in Syria. A lot of these fake asylum seekers are wanted criminals in their own countries. That's why they leave them. Following the arson at the Napier barracks, Brexit leader Nigel Farage said that the British public is sick to the back teeth of shelling out billions and billions on illegal immigration for migrants who expect four-star hotel accommodations. Many migrants, some of them lethally violent, were and are accommodated in hotels at the taxpayers' expense, a phenomenon which Mr. Farage helped to expose. And of course, I think there were five or six of the hotel staff that were stabbed in Glasgow before the fake refugee was finally shot by the police. We've had a lot of stabbings going on in these hotels and just a lot of violence and crime that accompanies these fake refugees that has also happened on the continent. Commenting on the complaints from migrants about the conditions in the camp, Farage said, "At the Napier barracks, they've got safe accommodation, a bed, three square meals a day, and the freedom to more or less come and go as they please. I'm sure there are homeless ex-army veterans who would quite like to be looked after like that, but it's not been good enough for these people," he added. In 2020, over 8,400 illegal migrants crossed the English Channel from France officially. Over four times as many came as the prior year. So this is increasing, and that's only the number that we know about. Why are they not doing something about this? The Brexit leader predicted thousands more will continue to pour into the country as soon as the weather gets warmer, noting that since leaving the EU, the UK has not secured any arrangement to deport illegal migrants or failed asylum seekers back to Europe. While the Boris Johnson administration and Home Secretary Priti Patel had indicated that they would finally resolve the Channel crisis at the end of the 2020 Brexit transition, they still appear unwilling to discuss simply taking a unilateral decision to turn illegal migrant boats back at sea, as happens in Australia, for example. And what actually happens in Australia is that they rented a part of Papua New Guinea, and they set up a camp on Papua New Guinea, and anybody that turns up illegally in Australia trying to claim asylum is given asylum, but they're given asylum in this camp in Papua New Guinea, and that has stopped all the illegal attempts to break into the country. And you can say, well, Papua New Guinea is miles away from Britain, but there are islands that could be used. Greece is in a lot of problems at the moment. It's got a lot of economic problems. Perhaps you could say, well, let's rent out a part of Greece and we'll put these asylum seekers on a camp in Greece where they're safe from the war. I mean, these are people that say that they are fleeing from war, in which case the idea should be that they eventually go back home again. The idea is that this is just a temporary respite, a temporary refuge from war that they are looking for. And if that is the case, they would be quite happy living in a camp anywhere just so that they can have a break and then they can go back to their country afterwards. But of course, that is not what these fake refugees are after. They are not fleeing war. There is no war in France. There is no war in Italy. There is no war in Spain. They are coming here because they see our welfare state and our benefits and our education and our free healthcare, and they want it. And this is why our healthcare system and our education system and everything else is falling apart in our countries, because our countries are being filled up with people that have put nothing into the system and have been incapable of building their own system in their own countries. And that is down to them, and it's the proof of the fact that they are different to us. It's racial differences is the reason why they don't have the level of civilization in their countries that we do in ours. It has nothing to do with us somehow oppressing them. It's just the fact that they are different. Exactly the same reason for why there are more blacks in prison. It's got nothing to do with us oppressing them or systemic racism or any other excuse. It's just down to them being a different race that has higher levels of criminality than the white race. And even the Chinese and the Japanese, they have lower levels of criminality than the white race. And all of these things are just proof that we are different races and we are meant to stay separate. And if we are separate, there's no racism, is there? Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.